So the sequester, you know, this thing, as you well know, it was meant to be kind of a poison pill, you know, built to fail, forced negotiations. No one would ever settle for this in the end. So what happened? How did we get to this point?
Well, I think if you appoint people to this kind of committee who won't compromise, you don't get compromise. Because compromise really means that you've got to, you know, give on certain things to get on other things. And that just didn't happen. I wasn't there. I don't know the details. But I think that's a fair comment. And I think people didn't realize it, and that sequester was put in there to kind of urge them on to settlement. But clearly it didn't. And I think it's a demonstration of the hard edge of polarization and partisanship in the Senate.
Are you, you know, some feel that here we are, it's at the last minute, and just today the leaders are sitting down with the president. Do you feel that there was enough of a sense of urgency leading up to this day? I mean, shouldn't there have been more discussions, more meetings? Why wait to the last minute? Was that a mistake?
I think because there was no signal, no sign, no indication that anyone was going to compromise. I think it's the same thing. Now, you know, we had a bill. It cut back the amount of sequestration. It took the cuts from the ag bill, which the House wouldn't pass, which are $29 billion, and used those as an offset. And it invoked the Buffett rule that people who earned over $1 million would be required to pay at least 30% income tax, which is not unreasonable.
It must be incredibly difficult to work in an environment where people just don't trust each other.
Yeah, it is. And see, what happens is we don't have an everyday working relationship with the House. So what you get back and forth are sound bites. And the sound bites that get the press are all the negative ones. There are very few sound bites that come through, that bounce across the Capitol, that have positive suggestions in them. Having said that, I know there are people that want to work out a compromise. I believe that a compromise depends on some long-term, and I stress that word, entitlement reform.
And do you think the president...
And in return for the closure, at the very least, of certain tax loopholes.
And do you think the president... And I mean, there are some people who suggest that maybe the Democratic Party, really, at least enough on the left, you know, they've wanted big cuts in the defense budget. And then on the right, they've wanted these big budget cuts. Will there be enough in the middle to get something done as opposed to letting things...
Yeah. Yeah, I can't say. I know I feel that way. I know there are others in my party that feel that way in the Senate. And I know that there are some in the Republican Party who feel that way.
That way being...
I talked to some, and I intend to pursue it. I didn't want to do it until we get through the two measures that were voted on yesterday. And, you know, as usual, we had two members who voted for the Republican proposal. And I believe the other proposal, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, the Republican proposal just got 38 votes.
Yeah. Well, let's look at California. In the sequester, as these cuts begin to get phased in, how does California stand to be affected compared with other states?
California overwhelmingly is affected the most. We're almost double anybody else. And that's because we have a big defense sector. So for us, it's immediately 64,000 civilian DOD employees that would be furloughed. Now, that's gross pay, because I have it in front of me, of $399.4 or $400 million. It's a cut in our base operations by $54 million. That's the Army, Air Force 15, Navy, maintenance of five ships in San Diego. And then it goes on. And I'm very concerned about the education cuts. It's $87.6 million from Title I. Title I is the part of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act that goes to poor schools, and it supports teachers and it supports material for curriculum as well as other things. And that's a cut of services. Now, this is vague, but it's what comes out of the White House, 187,000 students affected, leaving 320 schools unfunded and putting 1,210, and the wording is teachers at risk.
Yeah.
It's 8,200 children losing Head Start, and it's 130,000 Californians losing unemployment training.
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of people who feel, well, we've been all through this before. It's a game of chicken. It isn't really going to happen. This is just atmospherics. It's politics. They'll figure it out. I mean, is that wrong?
Well, let me say, on the impact on California, do you have the White House released state-by-state report document?
I do. I don't have it right in front of me, but I have it at my
desk. Okay, so you've got these California cuts.
Yes.
Okay, because if you go into that document, you will see things. I don't know whether you know this. We have 250,000 homeless children in the state. San Bernardino has like almost 30,000. You have kids. Now, some of them are in motels. Some of them are in some housing. But you've got, as I understand it, over 30,000 that are sleeping in cars in parking lots. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. And what happens on the border, food safety, FAA, plane delays, border crossing delays, customs delays, law enforcement cuts. I mean,
but those who say, well, you know, that's what they're saying, because
that's true. That's what they're saying. But this is, you see, I don't know. I would go back to the days when I was mayor. You could do maybe across the board up to 1%. Then you begin to really impact payroll over that. You just can't find enough.
No.
And so if you go 5%, you are cutting deeply into payroll. I'm going out at noon to talk with the head, what we call the Director of National Intelligence, Jim Clapper, about very serious cuts in intelligence that are going to take place. Now, that's not, you know, the cuts aren't going to be public information because it's all classified, but it's serious. And so it's across the board, and you have no flexibility.
It's the worst way to budget.
It's the worst way. Let's say I'll give you an exact indication. We have long lead 3-year financing on three big Navy mobile platforms being built in the NASSCO shipyard in San Diego. I was there late last year, and I saw the materials on the dock. The first ship was being completed for the second and third ship. Well, they cut the hose. You lose the long lead financing. NASSCO gets stuck with the materials already purchased, and the shipyard lays off people.
Yeah. There are other issues. I mean, this is, of course, now everyone's focused on this, but you obviously care deeply about things like gun control. Immigration reform is being discussed at the same time. Do you think that all of this, what impact does all of this have on those other big issues?
Well, if I were to be successful, which is a long stretch, with the assault, I hope, you know, I intend to fight it to the bitter end, but if I were to be successful, I don't really think it would have that much of an immediate impact, because it's a different kind of bill. But anything that has money in it would be affected. There's just no question. Everything would stop. Any authorization or appropriation for anything new would be non-existent.
Including immigration reform?
Yes.
Hmm. Well, how optimistic are you that, you know, everyone's going to come to their senses?
Well, I am hopeful that there will be an effort emanating from the White House, if not in week one, which is next week, week two, when people begin to see what's happening, for a compromise. The White House, as you know, the president has put forward some entitlement changes. And I would support, see, there are changes you can do outside of the 10-year window, which don't affect people currently on these programs. And then there are other changes, like means testing.
Yeah.
As I say, you know, I've worked all my life. There was a time when I really thought I would have to depend on this. I don't. So why should I get it?
Yeah.
But it has to be a safety net, because increasingly with Social Security, companies aren't giving pensions or retirements to general workers. Therefore, the only thing they have is Social Security. So it becomes really important for people who aren't well-to-do. And that's what we need to protect. These programs went on as Great America programs that everybody would get them. Millionaires, billionaires, thousandaires, everybody. And now they have to be shaped into more like insurance programs.
Yeah.
That if you need them, you get them. If you're above a certain level to a certain level, you pay much more to have those. And if you're at a certain high level, you don't get them. I don't understand why that isn't obvious, but it isn't.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you can do outside of the 10-year window certain things that won't affect people now. Even if you can begin to change retirement, increase the age a month a year.
Well, it all sounds
because
so reasonable.
People are living longer. They are working longer.
Yeah. Let me, I know we've come to the, I said it would be about 10 minutes, and I want to let you go, but a quick question, if I could, about Prop 8. The Obama administration yesterday filed a brief against Prop 8. There's been, of course, he's had his own evolution on same-sex marriage. You've had yours. Many people have. Meg Whitman signed a Republican brief, as did Clint Eastwood. Do you see all of that having any impact on the nine people who really count at the Supreme Court?
I think, well, and I've told my people there, I have a wonderful judiciary staffer, an attorney, who has worked his heart out on this brief. And I happen to believe that the arguments that the brief makes are really legally cogent. And it begins with a constituent of Jerry Nadler's in the House, the two women who were married for a very long time. I think the survivor is in her 80s. And what it took away from them was estate tax. So she got hit with a huge estate tax when her partner died. Now, that's unfair. It takes the federal benefit away. And there are a whole host of hundreds, if not thousands, of federal benefits which a legally married, the state makes the marriage legal. If the state makes the marriage legal, the federal benefit should attach. I voted against DOMA. I think it was 1994 or 96, one of the two of them. 14 of us only in the Senate voted against it. But it was clearly a violation of the Equal Protection Clause because it selected one group of a legally designated entity and discriminated against them and took away federal benefits.
And what about the Prop 8? I mean, the Prop 8 is a different, I mean, it's a lot of times You know, the president had said, hey, leave it up, let the states decide. Get rid of DOMA, but let the states decide. And now they have, now they're saying, no, California was wrong.
Well, that is being challenged, as you know. And it's going before the Supreme Court. And it's really important. And I think I think today it's a different story. And I think you have to you have to register the change in people. And people have changed. And so you have, what is it, 8, 9 states now that license marriage?
Yes.
So people within those states or people going to those states can be married in those states.